Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we are going to be talking about a subject just about everybody's interested in, and it's healing. So many times we have situations in our life, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, that challenge us. My guest today, David Elliott, whose first book was called The Reluctant Healer, and this book is just healing all by itself. I want to welcome you, David, to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be with you again, Donna.
It's a pleasure, David. This book I was very impressed with because you really, really put a lot of heart and soul into it. And being a healer yourself, being involved in that modality, I always find it refreshing when someone is unafraid to share what they know. So many people like to cloak their understanding in either mysticism or, gee, you have to earn it. Nobody can have this information but me. But you're not that way. You're very open, and you have for a long time worked with energy healing. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things you find out that people have to get past are their fears. But you really believe that it's so important that we all are educated about this so that we can empower ourselves. David, for those in my audience that are not familiar with it, give us a little bit of your background and how you evolved into energy healing.
Well, there's a reason why the first book was called The Reluctant Healer, because, you know, I eventually felt like my purpose when I started to figure out what I was doing with my life was to be an actor. And a very short time after living in Los Angeles, I had complete strangers start to grab me and tell me I was a healer and that they'd been sent to find me, and, you know, this whole thing that was beyond comprehension. So needless to say, that startled me, and I didn't really know what they were talking about. And so after I, well, had that happen 10 or 15 times, I looked up at the sky one day and I said, okay, God, you need to send me some answers because I don't know what's happening. And my phone rang shortly after that. And my best friend said, hey, I've met this person. You have to meet him. He's a healer. And I said, well, I must need to meet him because I got to find out what a healer is. So that kind of started this journey into me even, I guess, thinking about what is a healer, what is healing. And, of course, meeting him, his name was Tim Heath, he very quickly gave me more information that was hard for me to comprehend, because he told me he had known me many lifetimes and that, indeed, I was a healer, and that I had taught him a breathing meditation and some healing work back in India a couple thousand years ago, and I thought he was, you know, crazy, and he laughed and said, yeah, you're clairaudient, you have these gifts, I'm not here to teach you anything, I'm just here to remind you who you are. And I said, well, I'm an actor, I'm not a healer. And he said, well, just do the healing work, it's going to open all the doors. You know, and he stuck around for a couple of years. I sent all the people who were coming to me to see him. They'd come up and still grab me, and I'd say, no, you got the wrong person, but I know who you're looking for. And I would just funnel them all his way. However, in that two-year period, I did start to realize, a lot of what he was doing with people was actually very similar to how I was looking at acting and how I was realizing the acting that fascinated me had spirit in it, contained lots of energy, and had this magnetism to it that drew me in. And so simultaneously, as a performer or as an actor, when I was learning that craft, to me it was the most spiritual thing I had done in my life to date. It taught me about my emotions. It taught me about my energy. So I feel like I've probably been studying energy my whole life, growing up on a farm in Kentucky with animals and nature, and then finally leaving the farm, going to college, ending up in, you know, a city like Los Angeles. How things flow and function, energy has been a big awareness for me. And as I still was reluctant about doing the work with people, they kept coming. This guy Tim died, and so it all turned back and fell in my lap. And I eventually said, "Okay, universe, I'll see 5 people a week." And before I knew it, it turned into a lot more, and kind of started weeding out my time to pursue acting. Then cut to September 11th. The day after that, September 12th, I woke up very early in the morning. I was guided to get in my car and to go to the ocean and get in the water and wash myself, wash away the fear. And when I did this and kind of raised up out of the water, I heard this audible voice say to me, "It's time to start writing the book." Now, I've been told I was going to write books most of my life, but I didn't know how that was going to take place. And when I heard this, I, got goosebumps up and down my spine. I still hesitated. And the next thing I heard was, "You either start writing the book today or we're taking it all away. Your gift, your clients, your family, everything." I chuckled and said, "I guess I'm writing a book." So The Reluctant Healer came out of that inspiration, I guess. And that book really laid out this early journey and then the way I look at the healing work that I do and kind of how a person can take this book as a handbook and follow it and start to figure out, their life purpose and kind of get on with some healing in their life. And then the new book is really, I feel like it's more, not only a refinement, but a deeper, it's like a vertical plunge into really why I see people heal and what they can do to heal themselves, and where I see people not heal, and maybe some reflections into our society, and maybe some of the ways I see our culture and planet stuck. It covers quite a few bases.
Well, David, with this book titled Just Healing, mm-hmm. you have some interesting comments, which I really, really feel are very, very true. And one is that when you're willing to accept responsibility for everything you create in your life, you can heal yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the power to heal lies within you. If you got yourself into a mess, you innately know what you need to do to get out. And the greatest antidote, and I'm just pulling different things out of the book, is to love oneself. Mm-hmm. And how do you get energy flowing when you feel like you're stuck and you have some great, great exercises? And one of the components that I had a deep appreciation for is that in this book, you're saying, I don't care what your belief system is. I don't care what your background has been. I don't care where you are right now at this moment. It doesn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
You need to pay attention to what's going on right now, because you're the one that is living with yourself. You're the one that's in your body. You're the one that has to, again, pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved your recommendation to be aware, just to be cautious about any kind of extremism, because it doesn't work. It is not what is supposed to be. Beware of any organization that says for $500,000, I guarantee you, you're going to turn purple and blue when you pass the green light at Sepulveda and 150th. No, you don't want this. You want to be able to understand that what is in your book, a person reading it needs to realize that you're giving information here that anyone can use. This is not a big secret. There's no magic formula. You're going to have to work with some of the tools yourself, primarily, and be honest with yourself. And I think as human beings, that's a real, real tough thing for most people to do, is to be honest with themselves. Would you agree?
I totally agree. And, you know, I had a few people in the beginning on the publishing end say, wow, you know, it's a great book, but it's a lot of work. I mean, gosh, people are going to really have to roll up their sleeves. This isn't just an easy read. And I said, well, I know that, and I'm writing it for the people who are ready to do the work. And they said, well, that may not be everybody. And I said, I'm fine. I don't care. Those that aren't ready, maybe one day will be. You know, I'm very dedicated to those with the appetite and the desire and the choice to do the work in their life. I said, that's why I wrote this book. I don't care how many copies it sells. As a matter of fact, I'll just flatten that and offer the book for free if people want to download it. I said, I don't care. I know that my purpose is to get this information out and try to help as many people with it as I can. So I've stayed true to that.
You made a statement about victims.
Mm-hmm.
And you say victims are addicts. And I thought that was a very thoughtful description. And when we're speaking of this, we're speaking of the fact that someone is getting repetitiously over and over and over again into the same patterning.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, oh, gee, it's someone else.
Right.
This is the addict's behavior, whether it is with substance abuse or anything else. It is that compulsion to not look within the self, but to look outside the self and say, it's the world, it's my parents, it's my dogs, it's the hot air, it's all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And when you use the term, a victim is an addict, I thought, that is a very good description. I'm thinking of someone right now that I've known for years, who for most of her life has been a victim, and she's so entrenched in it that to get her to separate from it is very, very difficult because it has become such a habit.
Mm-hmm.
And her emotions just go all over the place because of it. So you bring up some very, very good points.
Mm-hmm.
And to remove an old pattern, to replace it with a new one, you say sometimes we're stubborn. We don't want to do that. Talk about stubbornness a little bit.
Well, you know, I've studied that so much, even more closely in the circle of people closest to me. You know, I always say that the hardest place to maintain the clear boundaries are, you know, in these very close relationships where people sometimes can feel like they have the right to be stubborn or to demand certain things. And I always say, hey, I love you, but I got to say no here. And so, you know, by saying no, I usually say it takes more love to express no peacefully than it does to say yes. And saying no lovingly and holding a firm boundary will kind of bring the demon out in a way sometimes that can be contained in stubbornness when a person is very adamant that they're going to get their way and that they have to be, you know, treated or loved or get energy a certain way. So stubbornness is something that, you know, can also maybe have some righteous qualities to it. And unfortunately, you know, I try to tell people, so many people I know who feel bad about the status of their life, you know, in our country, and I go, gosh, you got to travel around to some other countries and see how much we have and how much we have to be grateful for in our country. So stubbornness can be, you know, it can have a lot of victimization in it, let's put it that way, if a person is adamant about holding their position.
One of the lessons that I had to learn at a relatively young age was those people who do not serve best interests and purposes for you, you do have to distance yourself.
Yeah.
They can be members of family, they can be friends, they can be perfect strangers. But I liked your statement in your book. You said, anytime you tolerate mediocrity in others, it increases your own mediocrity. And that is a challenge, I think, because so many times peer pressure, professional peer pressure, for people of any age,
right.
They'll say, wow, I really would like to belong to this group. What do I have to do? I just finished reviewing some material on someone that for years subjected themselves into an environment that they put themselves there. Nobody else did. They gained a lot from it, but they watched a deterioration of an environment, and they stayed in it, and they stayed in it, and they stayed in it until finally they decided to stand up and speak out. So it was their journey and their experience, but they had to reach that point. And so many people, I know even some of my listeners, would probably say this. I have certain people in my life, whether they're family, friends, whatever, that I really cannot tolerate being around. So just don't be around them.
Right.
And you have that choice. You have that right and that privilege to discriminate. And discrimination is not a bad word.
Right.
When you discriminate, you're making choices, and that's what you bring out. And I see so much wisdom that you have in the book, and it's so down to earth. Now, let's talk about doing the work and developing intuition. It's work, isn't it?
It is work, and I tell people, as a matter of fact, somebody asked me that question yesterday. She said, well, I've gotten to your book to the intuition place, and I don't know what to do there. And I said, well, that is more of an advanced level. If you've done, going back to the starting point, you know, of developing an awareness to what self-love is and being able to build on that, once a person gets the understanding of how the universe and the connection to everything flows from, you know, the point that I call self-love, other people, you could call it universal love, unconditional love, but to really be able to sustain that then puts us into a flow with energy and the universe and nature, so that where I'm fed, but I know it works for everybody if you just choose to be aware, where you're fed this continuous stream of information. And, you know, I call this intuition because it always is laden with much energy. And often, if I'm in my heart and paying attention, it'll be the next thing. It'll be what I'm asking a question around. It'll be, you know, I always say the universe is the most amazing artist in the way that it communicates. And I kind of look at everything I do in my life as art and an artful expression. So intuition to me, it's a very high form of artistic expression, you know, from the universe, our spirit flowing through our consciousness. So
I agree. You bring up, and just to follow up with what you've just said, in your book, Healing, you bring up as part of the development of the intuitive factor the use of creativity, and you just commented on that.
Yes.
You encourage art, you encourage writing, and you have a series of exercises in your book where you want people to challenge themselves with their creativity, and you say, take a big risk, tell your best friend you're going to start a creative project you've been waiting to do your whole life, and then share your risk maybe with a family member. Perhaps you don't have a family member you want to share it with, then share it with another friend.
Mm-hmm.
And also tell maybe a complete stranger that you're going to do something creatively. Now, why do you want to say it three times?
Well, when I was writing it, it just showed up. In my clairaudience of hearing, the universe said, you know, share it three times. And the thing of even sharing it with a complete stranger kind of almost came in out of left field in a way, but I knew there was some energy flow in that, that maybe a stranger could almost be mirrored as being recognized by the universe. The universe had a plan when it put me in Hollywood and told me, you're an actor, do this thing. And I got to study very creative, artistic people in all forms of the entertainment industry. And I realized that when most of these people were floundering was when they had stopped doing their creativity or the expression that got them to where they were. So my antidote for most of those people when they would come to see me would be like, well, get back to writing, get back to painting, get back to singing, you know, start rehearsing, practice, you know, get back to what you know. Well, a lot of these people, I wouldn't see them again for years. They'd come stumbling back in. I'd say, okay, well, are you doing your work? You know, what's going on? And it was always this repetitive cycle of the artist stopping creating and getting into something that pulled them into a place where they get stuck emotionally, mentally, physically. So it is creativity, I find, is one of the shortcuts to healing, no doubt. Expressing creativity,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that creativity, whether it's through music, art, dancing, I don't care how you do it, or writing, whatever, mm-hmm. It really enables you to free yourself.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible transformation that can be the result. And you don't try to be a Leonardo da Vinci or a Michelangelo. You're just mm-hmm. yourself. And it really opens up a lot of things. You talk about a certain breathing exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Pranayama, what is it?
Pranayama. Yeah. Amazingly enough, you know, even when I wrote Reluctant Healer, I did not remember this guy, Tim Heath, telling me that I had taught him this breathing exercise in India, I don't know, over 2,000 years ago. I only remembered that, you know, 15 years later, you know, last summer. It was like, oh my gosh, he actually said that to me. So it's a breathing meditation that's, you know, a type of yoga. Apparently, that it originated in India. It's a type of breathing that its primary purpose, I find, with Westerners, but really, I guess anybody, is to, number one, get the brain to relax. So as we bring in more oxygen into the lungs, we're actually, you know, bringing that oxygen into the bloodstream, which does travel to the brain first and starts to stimulate the hypothalamus gland. Well, we're not hyperventilating because we're going to sustain this breathing meditation. So it's an active meditation, and we're going to sustain it for, I don't know, sometimes 7 minutes, but most of the time I go have people breathe 15 to 20 minutes, and I've done it as long myself as 2 hours, which mm-hmm. was one of the most profound experiences I've had in my whole life. Because once we can stop the brain from controlling everything and then get these ductless glands or chakras, so the hypothalamus, the pineal, the thyroid, the thymus, the adrenals, and sexual organs, when we get those to suddenly open and start to receive stimulus from the brain, but from the hypothalamus, that it's almost like clearing or erasing the trash folder in the email box, that we start to clear and clean much of the trauma and the pain that's stored in these, you know, mini computers. And as that happens, people immediately start to feel a vibration of energy that moves through their nervous system, like a pulse, or for a lot of people it can feel just like a gentle pulse or vibration or heat. Each person's spirit communicates with them differently, and I recognize it, you know, as I'm working with people, kind of sitting in like a midwife's seat of witnessing, I experience it as their spirit coming right in with the breath, coming into their body, and finally making its way home to their physical vessel and watching it merge into the heart. And when that happens, I find the illusion of what people are holding, which is mostly, you know, illusions about how painful love is or whatever that isn't really true, I find that that starts to leave the body because the negative emotions, the anger, sadness, and fear, are a lower vibration than love, a lower vibration than what the spirit travels with. And as that happens, as we breathe in the spirit, you know, people hit a state of complete calmness and openness where their heart opens, where usually their emotions clear. And I've seen this happen with many, many guys coming to see me wearing a suit and tie and maybe calling themselves a corporate tax lawyer or something, and getting up and saying, "That's the first time I've ever cried." But I don't treat that any differently than, you know, to me, crying is just part of a natural thing. But when the emotion's clear, I find that the spirit really has a very free path to merge into a person's body. And when that happens, ultimately that's the experience of this work that can't be truthfully described very well intellectually, because something like that is really, I don't know, hard to put words to. But, you know, I have successfully seen this happening for 20 years, and I've, you know, trained hundreds of people around the world to be able to do this work, I think, just as well as I do. And I know it's not, you know, privilege to me, but that it's something that is very easily transferred or taught to others, and really, as a space holder, much of it, again, is to not do anything and to trust the universe to have the agenda with people and to do the work, but to train people to just be witnesses and to be able to hold space is, I mean, that is an exercise that I enjoy doing. So that I guess would be how I would describe the breathing meditation. It's a tool that, it's like the training wheels on a bicycle. Once we can get you to get to have your balance, and we use the breath to really start to show a person how to discipline and slow their brain down, once that happens, then this relationship with the spirit starts to happen. And that's where, you know, the intuition starts to grow. That's where the creativity starts to expand into a person understanding their purpose of why they're here and why they're compelled to write stories and paint paintings and make music. And when we get people to that level, they're their own healers. They don't need me. I mean, I'm one of those that say, hey, if you only see me one time and everything's handled, I'm the happiest person ever. I don't need or want to see people more than once or more than they need. I never you know, tell people that they need to see me a lot.
Well, David, your book has so much information in it, and the book Healing is, I think, so clear in the information that you give. And a person, if they wanted to expand their own talents and capabilities, getting your book is very important. But they can also, because you've been talking about the breathing, there are free meditation MP3 downloads that are on your website, thereluctanthealer.com. And, of course, you also have a free newsletter. But this meditation, anybody can get it. I mean, if you, and all of my listeners are savvy with the computers. So you can go ahead, ladies and gentlemen, and get your own copy and try it out. But the book itself, if you are ready to get unstuck, if you are ready to take responsibility for yourself, for your life, David's book really can help you a great deal. And his website, again, is thereluctanthealer.com. David, I know that in your book you say, my thoughts are my prayers and my actions are my meditations. The choice is up to me. And I think those are words of wisdom and strength that when a person can accept that and acknowledge it, they are on their way to understanding true freedom in its highest level. Again, thereluctanthealer.com, Dave Elliott, I want to thank you very much for being my guest today. And you've got to send me your next book.
Oh, I will, Donna. You'll be first on the list, and I'm very grateful to have this exchange with you. Thank you.
You're very welcome, David. This is Donna Sebo again, thereluctanthealer.com. We're taking a break for just a moment. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Good things to share on this wonderful, wonderful day. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Hey, it is absolutely gloriously, magnificently beautiful here in Fairbanks, Alaska. Of course, even with the bright blue skies, you'd think you were in Palm Springs, except for a few things. One, there's snow on the ground, so you obviously know it's not warm like it is in Palm Springs. Two, you step outside and you have definite proof because your eyeballs are going to feel like they're exploding because the temperatures have dropped so much. So it is absolutely gloriously beautiful, and you think with all of that sunshine, it warmed things up more than what it does. But that's the way it is up here in the far north when the sun smiles. It's like a little boy said to his grandfather. I saw the cutest cartoon, and it reminded me of the weather up here. This little boy is walking with his granddaddy outside, and he's all bundled up because the temps are getting colder. And he says, Grandpa, we really need to, I just need to know something, Grandpa. Have we turned the sun up? He said, excuse me, what are you talking about? He said, Grandpa, the sun's out, but have we turned it on? It's awful cold out here. And his grandfather looked at him and he said, I'll talk to somebody about that and see what we can do. And the little boy said, gee, I really appreciate that. Thank you. And his little hands are down, burrowed down into his jacket pockets because he's so cold. The sun's out, but somebody forgot to turn up the thermostat. Anyway, I just thought I'd share that with you because that's how you feel when you go out in this weather. I've been up here at times when it's been 70 below zero. And I remember the first time I encountered that in the far north, I thought my eyeballs were going to literally explode out of my head. That kind of cold, if you have never experienced it, is unbelievable. So you never take anything for granted up here in the far north. And in Fairbanks, weather can change so fast, it's not even funny. Well, talking about change, if you're interested in finding out what might be coming in to your life, then give me a call at 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, just know that I will give you information about yourself. Of course, I like to know where you're calling in from, too. And then after that, you're welcome, after I tell you what I perceive, you're welcome to ask a question about anything that might be on your mind. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call into, and that's toll-free worldwide. Now, quickly, I want to mention, I'm here in Alaska, and for those of you who are listening from the phenomenal state of Alaska, I'm going to be down in Anchorage. I will be there tomorrow through Monday, and I'm available for private interviews, consultations, and all you need to do is call my office at 800-872-8852, and I'll be glad to schedule some time with you. Also, I am going to be in New York, not for a long time, but I have got an appearance there. I'm going to be in New York from the 21st to the 23rd. So any of you listening from the Big Apple, if you wanted to meet with me while I'm there, give me a call at my office, 800-872-8852. I wanted to share some information that came to my attention, and we'll get to it right after we take our first caller here. Don't forget, 888-815-9756, and you can chat with me too. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hello, my name is Ed. Last initial is B. I'm calling in from San Francisco.
Hi, Ed. Glad to have you as part of the show. Let's get
busy
and tell you some information. First of all, Ed, you need to have your eyes checked. You have got a change in your vision. Now, it's not major at this time, but it's enough when you would have to maybe look at a BlackBerry or at a computer screen. You're finding that your eye focus is not what it should be, and it's just ever so slight. So you may need to have some special glasses to be able to work with, and I would suggest you have them slightly tinted, because sometimes you're in lighting that can cause a stress and strain with the eyes. But talk to your eye doctor about it, and I think you'll be very, very happy with the results. Also, what I'm looking at with you is there is emotionally, there is a pain in the heart. This is your emotional self. And you've been carrying, I would call, a weeping wound of personal experience, and it's never quite healed. And it's like it goes along, and it's healing up just fine, and then all of a sudden something comes and causes it to rip open a little bit. Not a whole bunch, just enough where it starts weeping. You need to be able to heal it. You need to be able to move on past certain painful experiences, because this is slowing you down as far as the interactions that you're having with other people. And I really appreciate your compassion and your sensitivity, but I'll tell you what, when someone is as intuitive as you are and as sympathetic with people as you can be, it's very easy to absorb what they are sharing with you or putting out. And I want you to learn how to be empathetic, not sympathetic, because that compassionate side of you, I would never want that to disappear. But I want you to realize you don't take on and absorb other people's stuff, their pain, their emotional trauma. Don't do that, because you're not doing them a favor. But when you're empathetic, then you have a chance to interact with people and actually assist them in the ways that you want to assist them without damage to yourself. And you've been this way ever since you can remember. And it's often made you very, very shy in certain environments because you feel things so deeply. Stop being so hard on yourself and realize that it's because of this tremendous compassion that you have that you're going to be able to give to life in a very, very special way. And you're going to have a rough 5 years ahead of you because you're learning about yourself and you're learning to discover the strength and the patternings that you need to change. And this is something that's a do-it-yourself job. There's no way you can find a powdered mix, add water, and stir it, drink it, and you got it. It doesn't work that way. You're having to develop some new patternings in your life. It's going to, once you get in the flow of it, it's going to make such a difference. And I really think you'd make a profound counselor, a real good advisor. But you still need to be good to yourself first before you're going to be able to do it well with others. Do you have a question for me, Ed?
Yes. The property I'm living in is up for sale. I'm wondering if you see any possibility for me to remain here or whether I would see me having to move.
I am looking at a sale not occurring quickly. Obviously, whoever would buy the property would make that determination. I think you're going to have to move.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to have to move. There may be an arrangement that they'll agree to, but I think whoever is going to come in to buy the property is going to want to take over the space.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad thing.
Thank you. Pardon?
I said, and that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm looking. I'm hearing. Go ahead. Go ahead and speak. We've got a little bit of a time delay on the phone line, so I apologize.
Oh, okay.
I think it's interrupted.
And the other question I'm having is whether you see a job coming for me soon.
Well, actually, I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4 different opportunities. It will be up to you as to whether or not you want to accept any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly what the positions are, but I'm seeing 4 different opportunities. So keep on keeping on because they're there. And I'd say if you want to accept the job, even though it may not be exactly what you want, keep on looking.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. You've been very
you
helpful.
Are very welcome, Ed. Thank you for calling
thank you.
In.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel. If you'd like to call in and chat, 888-815-9. 756 is the worldwide toll-free number if you'd like to chat. I wanted to pass along some information to you. You may or may not have read about this, but in Ottawa, Canada, an article came out where the government of Canada has formally declared bisphenol A, it's called BPA. It's a chemical widely used to create clear hard plastics as well as food can liners, to be a toxic substance. Now, that happened yesterday. This is formal. The compound, commonly known as BPA, has been shown to disrupt the hormone systems of animals and is under review in the United States and Europe. Canada's move followed an announcement by the government 2 years ago that it would eliminate the compound's use in polycarbonate bottles used by infants and children. Now, the compound was formally listed as being toxic to both the environment and human health in an official notice published online by the Canadian government. Now, there's a Mr. George M. Eni, the Director General of Science and Risk Assessment at Environment Canada, said that the move would make it easier to ban the use of BPA in specific products through regulations rather than by amending legislation, which they said would take far too long. It just takes far too long. I think that as we become knowledgeable, stop and look at how many things have evolved just in the last 20 to 40 years, use of chemicals in so many different components. Now we are realizing that this is affecting our well-being. It's affecting the well-being of our unborn children, and it's affecting all of the animals all over the planet, and the fish in the seas are being affected dramatically. So what goes around comes around. So if we don't clean up our act and what we do, then we poison ourselves. I wonder if that would motivate someone to do something. I think so. This is Donna Siebel. I'm here broadcasting in Fairbanks, Alaska. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, some fun stuff about genealogy I wanted to share with you. Couldn't believe it when I read it. Anyway, we'll come back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown-red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again, 872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, don't forget, tomorrow we've got a wonderful guest. We're going to be talking about The Idiot's Guide to Identity Theft. Now, I don't think you're an idiot. I'm not an idiot. But this means that there's a way that you can deal with identity theft. If you or someone you know has this challenge right now, by golly, you're going to want to hear Mari Frank. This is a wonderful book because with technology, with its expansiveness, and all of these variables that we're experiencing today, the crime within the technology spectrum is immense. It is absolutely unreal. So you need to be educated, and this is material that will give you the tools to work with, the know-how to straighten out any credit problems that might be there. Believe me, it is a must listen to, so I hope you can join me tomorrow. Now, if again, you want to call in, 888-815-9756. It wasn't all that long ago I saw a program on television about genealogy and DNA. And this whole program that was on a cable network was about Mr. Gates, who, not Bill Gates, but another Mr. Gates, who decided he was going to get the DNA studies for himself and for a number of very, very famous people. And what they discovered was amazing. Now, Mr. Gates is a black man, and to his amazement, he found that most of his DNA was Caucasian, not black. There were a number of people that were interviewed that were surprised that they had lineage going back to Charlemagne. Would this be something that would pique your curiosity? Well, apparently, there are people that really have a drive to find out about people's ancestry. And you don't necessarily have to use DNA. I saw this article in today's paper up here in Fairbanks, and I just couldn't pass it up. Maybe you've already read it. But the title on it is Genealogists Span Divide, Partisan Politics Couldn't. Palin and Obama are distant relatives. Now, I don't get into politics on this show, but this just was too good. I could not pass this up. Apparently, according to research, President Obama has family ties to none other than Sarah Palin, and this comes from the genealogists at Ancestry.com. This was a discovery this family history site made when looking for connections between political foes. Talk about taking a bunch of hot air out of somebody's sails. This could really do it. And Obama, apparently, is related to Rush Limbaugh. Mm-hmm. And also, a genealogist at the Utah-based Ancestry.com said Obama and Palin are 10th cousins through a common ancestor named John Smith, who was a pastor in the 17th century, and he lived in Massachusetts. And he's related to Smith through his mother. as is Palin. And there's just more and more in this article. And you just go, my goodness, who knew who back when? All of these things are fascinating. So they took this further. As part of the project, they looked at the trees of Obama, Palin, Limbaugh, and also House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity. And they didn't find too much with the latter three, but they did find with President George W. Bush, he's related to both Obama and Palin. Obama and Bush are 11 cousins through common ancestor Samuel Hinckley, and Bush and Palin are 10th cousins, one time removed, also through Hinckley. And guess what else they found out? It was John Smith's father-in-law. So they have just got all this information. It's a wonderful article. It was put out by the Associated Press, and Jocelyn Novak is the writer. If it's in the paper, you got to look it up, because to me, this is a hoot. It's really a hoot. You know, it just shows that we all have more relatives than maybe we want to acknowledge, and couldn't that be fun to banter about? I bet that there are going to be talk show hosts like myself that are just going to have a field day with something like that. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Now, by the way, there's this wonderful poem by Carrie Hahn. And, of course, here in Fairbanks, we've got snow on the ground. Forget having leaves on the trees. But for so many of you out on the East Coast and in areas on the West Coast where we have the cooler climates, like in the Pacific Northwest, the trees are changing, the weather has changed, and it's just beautiful. Well, this is a poem she wrote, "Leaves Mounded High, High, the air clean and crisp, and bright with promise. October, you're one of a kind, wonderful." And I agree with that. I just love October. I love the fall of the year. It's so rich with colors, and there's that crispness in the air. It's refreshing. It smells good. It's just absolutely a delightful time of the year. I have to say it is absolutely my favorite. I know we don't have a whole lot of time, but I wanted to share with you. And if you want to give me a call, I had enough time to talk to somebody if you want to at 888-815-9756. Animals of all types affect our lives. And sometimes we don't know how they're going to affect us or perhaps even save our lives. And a beluga whale did exactly that. It was at Polar Land in China. And this is a SeaWorld type of a tourist attraction that's in Harbin, China. There was a woman, her name was Yang Yun. She's 26 years of age. She was competing in a diving contest when her legs cramped badly from the icy water she was swimming in, and she couldn't surface. Her lungs were just ready to explode. She said, "I was sure I was going to die. There just was no way I could get up to the surface." But there was a force she felt, that's the word she used, a force she felt, that was pushing her upward. What she found out later was that the rescuer was Mila. She is a beluga whale who lives in the Marine Center. And what she did, now think about this, she took the young woman's leg in her mouth and propelled her to safety. Now, her thoughtful action, this whale, was just amazing to everyone. However, experts that have studied whales, when they found out about this, were not surprised. They said whales have all of the neurological apparatus to sense when something's wrong with another creature and to empathize. And there's a lot of stories of whales and dolphins coming to each other's aid, and both are capable of showing that kind of compassion to humans, too. Have you ever seen a beluga whale? Oh, they're beautiful creatures, beautiful creatures. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow I'll be broadcasting for you and to you from Anchorage, Alaska. I love this area of the world. I just think it's a fabulous place to visit, and I would encourage you to do exactly that. But at the moment, remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a fabulous day, and I'll be talking with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.